Al Basler here with New England Championship Wrestling, and we just witnessed history. Colt Cabana defeated Adam Pearce and is now up 2-0.
Shut up! You think for a second! Get back over here, boy! Don't shy away from me!
Don't look at me cross-eyed either, because I'll knock your ass out. Do you understand? Now, you said something right! Colt Cabana, every breath that I take, that I inhale...
How's it going, listeners? Chris GST here, web admin for pwponderings.com. This is not the interview show. At least I hope it's not, because I'd be a horrible guest. Tonight, I am joined by our senior editor, Jerome Cuson, to talk about a documentary. Jerome, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty well, and I agree. I think Chris would be a terrible choice for the interview show, especially given... You know, he is not participating in any of the independent wrestling shows taking place this weekend as it pertains to AAW or Shimmer. So, you know, otherwise, I think it's a good idea to be talking about something, a documentary that we are going to be discussing, Seven Levels of Hate. And I'm really excited to discuss this. Just had a chance to watch this as we're recording it about 24 hours ago. You know, I really sat down and had a chance to consume Seven Levels of Hate, watch the documentary, and then all the matches. So that's what we're going to be discussing here tonight.
Yeah, I only saw the documentary side. I haven't seen all the matches. When I did see some of them, they were on YouTube, so not the best quality. Definitely not the best audio, because frankly, some of them, the fans just didn't even sound like they were there. And then when I saw the documentary, I was like, that's a pretty good crowd. So... I'll have to rewatch those. But anyway, Jerome, let's get started. Seven Levels of Hate, Adam Pearce versus Colt Cabana, seven different matches, I believe six different promotions, one of them not being one of the original promotions that was planned for. Why don't you lay the land for us first, Jerome? Let our listeners know, for anyone that doesn't know what this was all about. And I honestly can't expect that, but there's a few. I saw you talking to our own Jennifer Lynn on Twitter earlier, kind of describing what the situation was. So let some of our listeners know what this entailed and then why this was made into a documentary.
So this is sort of a DIY project of Adam Pearce. His name is all over this as the director of this documentary, the co-editor. Obviously, he was one of the main subjects. So similar to Nigel McGuinness's documentary, this is something that is sort of near and dear to somebody's heart. This is a very personal project for Adam Pearce, and essentially what this documentary is the story of Adam Pearce and Colt Cabana's seven-match series as part of the NWA World Championship title. And Colt Cabana originally defeated Adam Pearce for the NWA title for the first time on an episode of Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, and then lost the title subsequently 6 weeks later to the Sheik, and there was some discussion in the documentary about that part of it as well, so you could get the full story of what happened, and the NWA eventually decided that the Sheik was indeed a terrible choice to be the champion, as anyone with half a brain could have told you that, but Adam Pearce and Colt Cabana essentially were given the opportunity to resuscitate their feud. The original feud sort of lasted around 8 to 10 months, and it sort of built up to this big television moment with Cabana winning the title. And so the second time around, they decided to sort of do this seven-match series. And I think whereas typically the heel would be the one to go up sort of 3-0, and then the babyface would, you know, maybe win 4 straight, they sort of went with a different dynamic in that Cabana won the first match that took place on television, Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. He won a first blood match with a finish that Adam Pearce himself said he borrowed from Jim Cornette. The second match was a Boston street fight, which Cabana again won. The third match was an I Quit match that took place in, I believe it's the same building that Ring of Honor recently ran in Glens Hopkins, Minnesota, for Steel Domain Wrestling. The second match took place for New England Championship Wrestling. Cabana won the I Quit match. The fourth match was a 2 out of 3 falls, took place in Metro Pro Wrestling out of Kansas City, and Adam Pearce won that 2 falls to 1, and he won the NWA Championship as part of this. The fifth match took place again in New England Championship, with Pearce winning the retaining the title. And then they sort of get into the controversy surrounding what was happening with the NWA going into new ownership. A lot of lawsuits, a lot of lawyers becoming involved and sort of bastardizing what this, just how special this series was. We'll sort of get into sort of the down and dirty in a few minutes, but just to finish talking about the final two matches, Cabana and Pearce wrestled in Salem, Oregon. Originally, they were scheduled to wrestle for a different company, but they had to go to Salem, Oregon because of some of the legal disputes. Pearce retained the title. Series tied at 3. Match number 7 was supposed to take place at Championship Wrestling for Hollywood, sort of ending where it started. Instead, they were unable to do that, and they had to settle their feud and have their seventh match in Melbourne, Australia. So this feud not only was done in 3 different time zones in the United States, but it was done in a 4th time zone and a 2nd country. And unfortunately, again, thanks to the NWA, the 7th match was not for the title. Colt Cabana won the series. Adam Pearce, one of the stipulations was that he would leave the NWA if he lost the series to Cabana. And Adam Pearce essentially said that Cabana was the NWA champion by virtue of defeating him. Cabana turned the title belt down. Pearce vowed to live up to the stipulation, saying he was done with the NWA. So Cabana and Pearce both threw down the title. Pearce walks out of the cage. Cabana kicks dirt on the NWA title. A very fitting end. Unfortunately, in so many ways, a fitting end to their feud. But that is a sort of a Reader's Digest version of the story. And, of course, there are a lot of details that I was not able to illustrate. But it was a very interesting look at the political world of pro wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, you said a mouthful there, though. And it really is, as you said, the Reader's Digest, because there's so much that went into this. And I even got to say, part of my reaction after I saw the documentary was they really tried to temper themselves. And for the type of personality that comes out on Colt Cabana's podcast, and then, of course, we were lucky enough to have Adam Pearce on a podcast here on PW Ponderings, these guys obviously don't have any problems mincing words. You know, they say what they feel from their gut. So when I was watching this, and I rewatched it last night, listening to them, I was like, man, they really kind of toned themselves down, because it was literally very soon after Colt Cabana was released from WWE, and then Adam Pearce and the whole Ring of Honor situation, and here he is. And he's worked closely with, well, now it's Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, it used to be NWA Hollywood. And you know that he wanted that. It was kind of, not that it was his baby per se, because it's always been run by Dave Marquez, but still, you know, he took a lot of pride in what he did there in LA. So when they were talking about it and how the NWA was influencing them, it, I mean, God, I'm going to put this out there, Jerome. Do you even remember the fact that Sabu and, you know, he was NWA champion during that time period, that 20-year stretch that Pearce mentions numerous times, where, I mean, God, the NWA title really didn't mean a whole lot. And that's nothing against guys like Sabu or Mike Rotunda, but it really was this feud that put them back on the map. And,
well, I mean, the NWA title hasn't meant anything since Ric Flair held it back in 1989. I mean, that's the bottom line.
And how dare you? There was a tournament, sir. Tournament.
It's an irrelevant. It's a relic from the past to me, and that's the problem with the NWA title. The NWA title doesn't mean anything because the people who are in charge of the title have just shown it an extreme amount of disrespect over the years, and, you know, trying to trying to make this title mean something when it's really just another independent wrestling title. I think that's sort of been the problem. And maybe we can get into this in shortly. But, you know, I think Pierce and Cabana, I think they were trying to do their best to really raise the prestige of this title and make it mean something. And I really think they were working hard to do that. And, you know, I'm not going to say that Cabana and Pierce are perfect. And, you know, I certainly have some legitimate criticisms of both men. But the thing is that the thing that struck me throughout was they were trying to tell a story that was not only going to elevate their standing in independent wrestling, but it was also going to elevate that NWA title to mean something. And again, Colt Cabana is someone that I think is a legitimate draw in independent wrestling. You cannot say that about so many independent wrestlers. And to me, there is a lot of value in having Cabana hold that NWA world title. If you want it to mean something, and maybe it's never going to be the WWE title, maybe it's never even going to be the Ring of Honor world title or New Japan Pro Wrestling title. But to me, if you have Cabana hold that thing for a year and you just have him go around the world and defend it, you know, I think people are at least going to be able to think of it as a title that is meaningful. And, you know, even though regardless of the NWA title standing, you know, I think that this relic from the past still does mean something to the fans who went to Steel Domain Wrestling and New England Championship and Metro Pro and even Melbourne, Australia. You know, I think this title could have meant more. But the NWA sort of ate its own tail, like so many people in pro wrestling eventually do.
Yeah, I mean, what were your thoughts when you were watching the documentary? And, I mean, obviously you've heard a ton of podcasts with both men. Did you kind of feel like there was definitely something there that they wanted to say, and there were points where you saw that anger and that fervor in their voice about the situation, but they were never unprofessional about it, which I thought says a lot about their character, you know, good or bad, you know, other things about them that you may have legit criticisms of. I think it says a lot that the NWA representative, you know, Thorpe, is that his name? Whatever his name is. You know, we see him now because, you know, he's helping Rob Conway over in Japan with New Japan and defending the quote-unquote NWA title there and trying to make it mean something again. But it's like, you couldn't get on this documentary and, you know, even just provide your side of the story. Even if maybe it had been skewed, maybe it would have been dealt with differently, I still think it would have meant a lot to have some representation on this DVD. And they just, you know, of course this is not entirely one-sided, because I believe they had
Some folks from the NWA on. They
had one of the men on the opposing side. I mean, they did have other representatives of former NWA promotions, but I think his name was like Rob Fursten, and I think he was on there. He was like the former COO of the NWA, and then he had to step down, and that was kind of glossed over, and I thought that was interesting. But anyway, so getting back to that whole thing is that they were trying to do something with the NWA, and obviously both men have a passion for it. They knew of the history of the NWA, what it could mean to them. And like you said, they tried to build something, and they just kind of got cut off at the knees. So what did you think of, like, when you were watching it and you saw, you know, you said you saw the matches, correct? All seven?
Yes, I watched all seven.
So I believe it was, I mean, there were already issues at around match 3 or 4, if memory serves, and it was really match 6 where it kind of came to a head. But what did you think of what they were trying to do? Did you think it would work?
I mean, I can't sit here and say, oh, it's going to change the face of independent wrestling, or, you know, it was going to change what independent wrestling is. But to me, there's natural credibility when it comes to guys like Colt Cabana and Adam Pearce. To me, the more important aspect was that these two guys were wrestling in independent wrestling federations that maybe they wouldn't be otherwise. And they were sort of using the NWA title to sort of inch their way into places like Steel Domain and Metro Pro, because I mean, these are smaller companies. This is not none of the companies that Cabana and Pierce wrestled for are really ones that, you know, we cover on this website. And that's no disrespect to the companies, but You know, Cabana and Pierce are bigger names on the independent scene, and I think they were trying to get some credibility for these companies. And what they were trying to do is they were trying to tell a story that sort of encompassed this national. They tried to put the national back in National Wrestling Alliance by having this feud take place in so many different and unique places. They sort of, Steel Domain is where they cut their teeth as independent wrestlers. Championship Wrestling is sort of their modern home and, you know, a place where a lot of their feud has taken place. New England Championship Wrestling, run by Sheldon Goldberg, is a company that's been around for a number of years. It's a very solid independent on the New England scene. And, you know, Metro Pro, sort of the same boat. They run in Kansas City. So I think it's just about trying to tell a story through these various independent companies, and these independent companies being smart enough to take advantage of having whatever value the NWA title has, even if you don't think it has any, you know, using that cachet, but also using the name value of a Colt Cabana and an Adam Pearce, and sort of encompassing their feud as well. So I think it's an incredible opportunity for any of the companies that got involved, because I think there is some credibility that is lent when you can bring in guys like this. And Cabana and Pierce are extremely good at telling a story in a credible and professional manner. I think they were able to do it in such a way that they weren't taking away from the storylines that were going on in these companies, but they were able to put on credible pro wrestling matches that told the story, and that I think kept the audience involved with what was going on.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that they tried to do that, and maybe it wasn't as successful just because they were almost doing it with their legs tied. You know, I think Pierce mentioned that around the middle of the feud, they knew there were some, lawsuits going on. And I think we even slightly reported about this on the site, too, back then, that there were some, obviously, some promoters of the NWA, they were obviously leaving. I mean, the first one, obviously, NWA Hollywood was gone. And then, a couple more in the Midwest. And you just started seeing these guys distancing themselves from the NWA. And you're like, huh, well, that's interesting. Wonder why that's happening. And it was just this whole lawsuit issue, and you know, it was about insurance, and I don't know what's right or wrong. I don't know what happened, how that all came about, but even if you have a change in management, how can you not realize that Adam Pearce and Colt Cabana have name value, they have marquee value, and you're going to call them both up and not want to negotiate with them? And from the sound of it, and obviously, like I said, there's only one side of the story, but when they were talking to Colt or having these conferences with Pearce, it just seemed like they didn't get it. They didn't get what Pearce and Cabana, what they were trying to do. And Pearce mentioned he wanted to, at the end, Colt Cabana was going to be champion, and he wanted him to hold the title for at least a year, bring some of that credibility back to the title. And then, of course, Colt Cabana kind of, you know, it's a win-win situation. Colt Cabana is this hot figure in wrestling. You know, CM Punk's mentioning him all the time. You know, we all know who he is at this point. And I don't know, missed opportunity, right, Jerome? That's the nicest way to say it.
I mean, absolutely. You know, I think it's funny to me just to hear sort of the defense. I'll go with Bob Trobich of the NWA was almost comedic, and this wasn't in necessarily reference to the seven match series, but the decision to take the belt off of Colt Cabana the first time. When he lost to the Sheik, and Bob Trobich essentially discussed in his part of the interview, comparing, you know, Cabana thinking of himself as Dusty Rhodes, and Trobich talks about how Dusty Rhodes only held the NWA title for a limited amount of time, even though he was a 3-time champion.
Jerome, you got to realize, champions lose, you know?
I understand that, but to me, I listen to what Trobich was saying, and I'm like, it's not 1984. The biggest difference between Dusty Rhodes, I mean, and there are so many differences between Dusty Rhodes in 1981, 84, and 86, and Colt Cabana in 2012. It's almost absurd. But, you know, Dusty Rhodes was, you know, Ric Flair is not walking through the door to defeat Colt Cabana for the NWA title. Colt Cabana's quality of opponents in 2012 for the NWA are nowhere even close to what Ric Flair or Dusty Rhodes or Harley Race or Terry Funk.
Yeah, Colt Cabana's not in the same position that Dusty was in the 80s, even in terms of, you know, backstage.
I mean, Colt Cabana's a big fish in a small pond. That to me is the bottom line. So when you give him the NWA title, he's not Dusty Rhodes. He's not a short-term babyface champion transitioning to another heel champion. The purpose of giving Colt Cabana the NWA world title is so that he can go around the world. He can mention the fact that he's the NWA champion on a podcast listened to by 100,000 people, including people that are in the professional wrestling industry. That's where the value comes in. The value, it has nothing to do with whether he's a heel or a babyface or what story that's being told with the Sheik. That, I mean, I just look at this as just a complete lost opportunity. And when Bob Trobich of the NWA trots this theory out, I want to strangle him and shout that he has no credibility because his argument is a complete fallacy.
I think he's working on the basis of, and there is a small degree of truth here, and, you know, I can't measure it, but say you have promotion X, and then the NWA, it becomes an NWA affiliate, and now it's NWA promotion X. Maybe it draws a little bit more in terms of live attendance, and maybe its titles mean slightly more than they would if it wasn't affiliated with the NWA. But I think, just speaking honestly, Colt Cabana's name value probably means a little bit more in terms of getting fan interest and the reach that he has through his podcast, through his Twitter, through social media. Which, I mean, I've argued kind of sometimes can mean nothing, but sometimes it can mean a lot. But if he has, you know, 150,000 followers and the NWA promotion itself has whatever it has, it's a lot less, then they should have taken advantage of that and seen that and said, you know what, we'll try to work with you. And I'm not saying they should have given him the keys to the castle. I mean, because that was the issue with Dusty Rhodes, if you want to get into that backstage stuff. Colt Cabana was never going to have that and never wanted it. I mean, I thought it was pretty clear when he said, I'm an independent wrestler. I go in, you contract me to wrestle. That's what I do. I bring you the fans. You pay me. Simple, right? And I think that's all he wanted to do. And he would have had good matches. I think, and this was maybe, we can talk about this a little bit later, Jim, but when you saw those matches, it really was a different side of Cabana, correct? It wasn't the Cabana we saw on the...
It was not goofy Colt Cabana. The best of Colt Cabana that you could possibly get from him in 2012.
Yeah, I mean, it reminded me of the stuff he was doing with Homicide and Ring of Honor. It wasn't, you know, the happy-go-lucky. And hey, Colt Cabana is great in that role. That's what he does. But when he was serious with Pierce, I think it added something to the NWA that the NWA hadn't had for me in a while. Because, as you said, we weren't really taking the NWA seriously. And then all of a sudden this feud, and it was definitely a blood feud because it had built up the 8 or 10 months before that, before even their first match. And I remember we got a lot of emails asking us, hey, are you going to post the results for that NWA Hollywood show? And we were like, yeah, we did. And people loved seeing Cabana's champ. And all of a sudden, I guess it was just 6 weeks later. I thought it was even less than that. But 6 weeks later when we reported, hey, look, the Sheik beat Cabana, it was like out of nowhere. And I remember
it was dumb and made no sense.
I think I even remember you tweeting me and saying, what the hell just happened? Why are you put this is not important. Because it wasn't. It was, and then,
I was
like,
pretty angry.
Yeah, it was like a few days later, there's already issues with the Sheik. And then a few weeks later, they stripped him. What the hell was the point?
It's funny, you know? It's sad for those guys, but it's funny to just see how pro wrestling consistently eats its own tail and doesn't make the proper business decisions. And ironically enough, the NWA was supposedly bought by a group of businessmen. Evidently, they missed the course where the object of pro wrestling is to draw money and to get credibility for your company. I guess they missed that day or they were partying too hard, but I just look at what Pierce and Cabana were trying to do And if these two guys are going to put in the sort of effort that they obviously were putting forth both in their promos and in their matches, then to me, the logical thing to do is to just let them do what they want because of their name value alone. I mean, it's tough to really say, oh, if Colt Cabana doesn't wrestle on this show, we're going to draw 175 fans. But if he does, you know, we're going to draw 275 fans. I mean, it's really tough because there's so many external factors that play into it. It could be the weather. It could be a football game. It could be so many things. But to me, I look at what Cabana and Pierce can potentially add to a smaller independent company. You know, maybe Adam Pierce and Cabana aren't going to really make a difference for PWG or AIW or AEW. But for Steel Domain Wrestling, you know, if you say the NWA World's Heavyweight title is going to be defended, maybe that draws a few extra people, you know?
I think we even have an example that we have in our website when we promoted the Pro Wrestling Collision show where Heath hadn't faced Adam Pearce. That definitely had more interest than just the average Pro Wrestling Collision show.
And I think that's because I think in certain regions of this country, the NWA World's Heavyweight title, it meant a lot more. I think that in the Carolinas and, you know, probably in Baltimore and in some places like that, that NWA World's Heavyweight title has a certain cachet to it. You know, personally, as someone who, you know, what became a wrestling fan in 1995 as opposed to 1985, you know, the NWA title doesn't really mean that much to me, and it's not going to make me really all that interested. But
I bet you didn't even know that Mike Rotunda was an NWA champion
around
95, actually.
But for me, what made me interested in the feud was just the idea of Cabana and Pierce doing this across seven different companies, and they had a different stipulation for each match. And I think that they were trying to tell a story, and that I think people complain that in independent wrestling, that's what's not being done, is stories being told. And here you had two guys trying to do that. If you watch each match, they're all different in the way that they're executed. You know, there's some matches that are sort of more brawling. In particular, you know, I think the dog collar match is very violent relative to everything else. And it's a very different match because Adam Pearce really dictates the match and he controls most of it and he wins it relatively cleanly. But then, you know, you look at a match like the 2 out of 3 falls and it's very mat based. There's a lot of wrestling. There's barely any action on the outside of the ring. So I think that sort of speaks to the fact that they were trying to make everything make sense depending on the stipulation for the match.
How did you think the difference, like, for example, they went from a 2 out of 3 falls, and then they, you know, they did do the Boston Street Fight, and then you had a match like the dog collar match, which, while it's a different gimmick, you know, did they utilize the gimmick enough so that you're like, well, you know what, it's a dog collar match, but really it just is like a hardcore match and they're attached to each other? Was there enough difference between the two that you were like, this was worth having that extra gimmick added on?
Well, I mean, there was a huge difference in the way I think they wrestled the two matches, because the first match that they did in New England Championship was the Boston Street Fight. And then that match, they literally brawled all across the building and went for pinfalls, and they eventually settled in the ring and Cabana won. In the dog collar match, 95% of the action was in the ring, and they sold that they were attached to each other by the neck very well. So, you know, the fact that they had these two matches in the same company, but they still, it was just different matches. It wasn't two guys just doing the same spots over and over in each one. You know, there was a unique quality to each of them. And, you know, I think the Texas Death Match, again, there was a lot more outside. There was a lot more crowd brawling, you know, mostly because they had the space to do it. So I think they did a really effective job of, you know, making each match feel different, so that if you watch seven matches in a row, it doesn't feel like you're watching the same thing seven times.
Well, thank God for that. I mean, because I do remember a few of them. I did watch the cage match, the final match, which, you know, obviously that was just tainted everywhere, you know, and that was obviously everything came to a head in that match. But then I slightly remember the 2 out of 3 falls match. I mean, because like I said, I watched it on YouTube, you know, so there's only it wasn't a fan cam. It was, you know, I think it was just a hard cam shot only. So I did miss some of the things they did on the outside. But still, I think it told enough of a story between the two that they were trying to do something special. Even if it wasn't the NWA title, I think they still have had great matches. And then you add that aspect to it, you could clearly tell that they really wanted to do something special. Not just for the fans there, but they knew everyone was going to watch it. I would assume they didn't think they were ever going to make a documentary and have all 7 matches all together. I mean, maybe. I think Pierce did mention in a couple interviews that he had the thought in his head that this was going to be an odyssey and he wanted to document it even before there were problems. And then the problems just kind of catalyzed it in his mind. Like, you know what? I need to tell this story because it's so it's so ridiculous. It has to be told. So I guess my other question for you is, knowing what they were going through behind the scenes, did that make the matches feel, I guess, did that add a little bit of gravitas to the matches when you were watching them? Or were you just watching the matches and saying, okay, let's see what they did in the ring, and let's just take it from there?
I mean, I think the only thing you can do is to try to just evaluate what is being put in front of you, even with the context. And I don't know, it did, based on what I was seeing, I don't think the external factors in any way affected Cabana and Pierce's in-ring performance. And I think that's a good thing. I think these two guys are smart enough, professional enough to where it wasn't going to affect what they were doing. And, you know, I think they told their story the way that they were going to tell it, regardless of the promotion that they were in. I think that to me is what's most important. And I give them a lot of credit for that. And, you know, I think the only way it affected, the only effect that it had, I think, was on the post-match Cage promo with Pierce and Cabana basically disavowing the NWA. So I think it may have affected it there. That to me is really the only spot I can identify as being a potential game changer as far as, you know, whether what was happening on the outside affected the inside. That is definitely an instance. That promo does not happen. I mean, the match probably happens in Los Angeles, so it's a pretty pretty big change. And yeah.
Did you? So was there at any point during the documentary when you were like, this is just too ridiculous? Like, obviously at PWP we did report on some of this. You know, and I'm sure thinking back on it, you remembered as being our senior editor, you were probably like, Chris, why are you putting this on the site? This is ridiculous crap. And it was at the time. And now that we've seen it all culminate together, when you were watching it, did you get angry again? Or what were you thinking while you were watching it?
I mean, Chris, I mean, we have to look at it this way. A promotion literally died. And the next day, I had to wake up to news that there were people within that company that didn't know it was dead until they read it on PW Insider or PW Ponderings or any of the other places. So if that can happen, then anything can happen in the world of pro wrestling, and especially independent wrestling. So there was at no point in this documentary a point in which I said, good God, this is borderline absurd. I don't buy it for a second because I believed every word of it. You know, I think that this is the problem with pro wrestling in 2013, is I think that there is such a sense of self-importance among people who run some of the companies. And in this case, I'm obviously referring to the people who run the NWA, you know. The people in the NWA, they either have the mentality that it's 1984, like Bob Trobich, or they have the mentality of they need to control Colt Cabana and Adam Pearce at every turn. And if they can't do that, then they're going to give Cahagas the NWA World Heavyweight title, or they're going to give it to Rob Conway, or they're going to give it to someone else who isn't as relevant or as good of a professional wrestler as Cabana or Pearce. So that to me is the takeaway for any pro wrestling fan, is that the NWA is an organization that had the chance to be elevated. Ring of Honor does not have television in the city of Los Angeles. Los Angeles is the second largest city in these United States. The NWA had a television show that was apparently being watched by six figures. And even if that rating isn't true, the fact that you have a television show in the second largest market, that is an asset. If you are forfeiting that asset, that makes you a moron.
Yeah, no, I've heard the same reports that the ratings are very similar to the ratings that SmackDown and sometimes Raw get. And of course, you know, we should all understand ratings are percentages, but that's still a pretty significant percentage. And if that is of the LA area, which is considered one of the hardest to get any type of audience reach in there, I mean, that says something. And they had it, and then I guess they decided to not do business with Dave Marquez anymore. And I don't understand that. That part, that to me is one of the more infuriating things. I mean, granted, I don't watch NWA, well, Championship Wrestling from Hollywood as much as I'd like. There are some of the episodes I've seen I could live without. You know, I'm just going to be honest here. You know, some of it is hit or miss. But if you are the NWA, and there isn't as – there's just no other NWA promotion I can even think of. Maybe NWA Smoky Mountain, the one based out of Texas, which we all know Bruce Starp owns. So obviously that is going to be – he's going to push that as one of the larger NWA promotions. They had that market and they didn't do anything with it. It to me, it's like kind of how like Ring of Honor, one of their biggest markets is in New York, and their TV's not there. Now, granted, that's slightly different because buying a TV station in New York, not cheap. So I can kind of give them a pass there. But with the NWA, what were you thinking?
I mean, the NWA, it's worse. They had TV in Los Angeles. They had a golden ticket. And then they didn't take advantage of it. I mean, at least, and it's not, I don't think it's a valid excuse, but at least Ring of Honor can say Sinclair doesn't own TV stations in New York, so we can't get it on. I mean, I don't think that's legitimate, but, you know, at least there is the excuse that they don't have TV in New York. The NWA had TV in Los Angeles, and they basically, they told Dave Marquez to go to hell, so... It's so confusing and perplexing, and I think for anyone who sits down and watches this documentary, I think that's the feeling that they're going to get, and it's unfortunate because I think Cabana Pierce, I think that it's important for everybody to watch both discs because I think when you watch the documentary, you may lose the sense of the story that is being told by these two athletes. And I think you could sort of really capture that if you watch the second disc where you can watch all of the matches and whatnot. But I think the thing that will stick with you with this documentary, at least for me, is the overall incompetence of the NWA. And that's a little bit unfortunate because I think Cabana and Pierce deserve a lot of credit for what they did. But it sort of gets lost by the stupidity of the people in charge.
Was there anything else, I mean, maybe something positive about the documentary that you wanted to discuss? I mean, because it kind of like we're being kind of negative. We're not being negative on the documentary itself. Obviously, we're talking about the subject matter. The documentary itself, given that Pierce doesn't really have a background in film, I thought was pretty well put together.
I mean, I think there are definitely some minor glitches that, you know, obviously a professional company could have fixed, but... You know, I think that it's still a very solid documentary, and it's obviously better than anything I could do. I mean, so if we're going by that standard, it's a pretty low one. But, you know, I think...
It's
very good. And, you know, I appreciated some of the technical aspects, putting the interviews together, getting some music videos together for some of the matches. And, you know, I think that this was a valuable piece of independent pro wrestling history, because if Adam Pearce doesn't do this documentary where we get to hear the perspective of these guys talking about the NWA and, you know, serving notice that the NWA is a bunch of fools, and even getting to see all seven matches in one compilation, you know, maybe this series gets lost. And there really is no way to recapture that. So I think this is an opportunity for people to sort of see these guys in a different light and also appreciate the story that was being told.
Right. You're right. It was a very unique situation, Jerome, and I hope you can appreciate my usage of that word, because there's not a lot of other documentaries out there that have done that when it comes to an independent promotional, in terms of we have the Wrestling Road Diaries, we have Bloodstained Memoirs, you know, we have things like the JCP documentary, we have shoot interviews, but they're all either centered on the talent themselves, they're not really focused on a specific feud or specific promotion, and in this case, you know, it's a body of promotions, but still, it told a singular story, and we rarely get to see that on the independent level. You know, I mean, everyone's talking about the Legends of Mid-South DVD that WWE put out recently. This is very similar, but it's obviously for the independent level, and we're probably not ever going to get to see that. I'm not saying ever again, but when do you see another wrestling independent promotion really taking the time to shoot some outside footage of themselves? I mean, one, there has to be the interest level, and I think it's there, but no one's really done that. I mean, I can't think of
one. When are you going to see a feud encompass multiple companies over a few month span? You know, I think that there is...
When are you going to see promotions work together to be able to bring that, to make that happen?
That's another lesson from the documentary, is that, you know, I think in order to tell this story, it took a cohesive effort from New England Championship and Steel Domain and so many of these companies. And, you know, I don't think there's any reason why this is something that can't happen again, and maybe even happen on a bigger scale. Is there a reason that, you know, there couldn't be a feud that goes to AIW, AAW, CZW, PWG, and two other independent companies? Is there what is holding these guys back?
Contracts,
except
Jerome,
for egos and contracts. And I don't think that's legit. I don't think that's, if two guys were to come to me and they said, we want to tell this story and we want to do it, you know, we want to do a best of seven, and we want to do one of the matches in this company, what motivation is there to say no to that, except for ego and thinking that your promotion is so much more important than another one? I think that's the only thing that holds this from ever becoming a reality again, and I think that's very unfortunate.
I think it follows that idiom of the more things change, the more they stay the same. I mean, you could put the situation back in the NWA during the 80s, and you would have almost the same situation of politically different promoters saying, well, you know what, I'd rather have the champion be based out of my promotion. You know, look at what Jim Crockett did with Ric Flair. He basically owned him and booked him, and that's what they wanted. Then Dusty, you know, was out of Florida or the South, and then, you know, you pretty much had that here. The guys didn't want NWA Hollywood to be too powerful. They didn't want... I guess certain promotions in Texas to be too powerful, and that's just what all got in the way. It's just very strange how that works out, because you would think they'd understand that to serve the greater good, which is independent pro wrestling, you have to give up something.
I mean, look, nobody in independent wrestling except for Super Dragon is making money off of what's going on right now. And, you know, people are scraping by, they're breaking even. You know, they're having trouble just sort of getting shows put together. You know, there isn't a wrestling show that goes by. If it's an iPay-per-view, there's a problem with the stream. If they're using wrestlers, then a wrestler is missing their flight or they're having trouble at the border. So I think the lesson of the documentary should be that everybody should have less of an ego and get more interested in telling these sorts of long-term storylines. But I think that gets lost by the important people. I hope that fans can sort of embrace this and ask this of their independent wrestling companies. But I think it's a really tough sell for companies to sort of say, oh, this is a really great idea, we should encompass something like this for us, or, you know, we should work with talents on, you know, putting a feud like this together and, you know, having that long-term story. And, You know, instead of just doing a dream match for the sake of doing a dream match, you know, maybe we can have, you know, these two guys fight for a reason. You know, there's nothing holding back independent wrestling except for itself.
Seems like long-term booking is a lost art, you know? Because I mean, if you had a sense of long-term booking, you could plan this out over, you know, I'm not talking years. I mean, I don't think we're ever going to get back to that stage where certain storylines happen over years, but certainly over a 6 or 9 month period, I think you could plan that out.
I mean, it's obviously tough with guys, you know, having contracts and guys going on international tours. You know, obviously these guys, they deserve to, if they have an opportunity to go to Japan for 3 months, you know, they have the right to say to an AEW and AIW, you know, we're not going to be there. And I think that's perfectly acceptable. And, you know, I would never criticize either the company or the wrestler for, you know, doing what they need to do to make sure that, you know, they get the talent coordinated. But, you know, I think there are some circumstances where it can work. And if they can put themselves in a position where it can, then I think you want to tell these long-term stories. I think it's something that is missing from independent wrestling, and I would like to see it come back. If Adam Pearce and Colt Cabana, you know, if they can do it across 7 smaller independent wrestling companies, then there's no reason that companies that have a far greater platform than New England Championship Steel Domain, there's no reason that it can't happen in other places.
Well, Jim, I mean, I don't know if you don't realize this, but it's not like there's a body of wrestling promotions that are actually all secretly, technically connected in the background. You know, there's nothing like that.
Nope, not at all. I don't even know what you're talking about right now, Chris.
Nope. So is there anything else about the documentary that we didn't touch on that you wanted to talk about?
You know, I think it really stays focused. There's no talk of Ring of Honor, it's mentioned a couple times, but they spend a little bit of time talking about how Cabana and Pierce knew each other before they wrestled. They were both on opposing high school football teams, and they sort of talk about how they broke into the business and how they sort of started off traveling together. But then it really just fast forwards and you get into their NWA story. So don't expect to hear any conversation about Cabana's Ring of Honor career or Adam Pearce's time as the booker. That plays no part in this documentary, and I'm fine with that. I mean, I think that the story they told was interesting enough to warrant 2 hours, and if Adam Pearce wants to do a shoot interview or Cabana wants to talk about it, they both have their various platforms to do so.
Well, I'm sure he'll be glad to know that you didn't think it was too long. So
it's fine. I mean, I would rather, I think with a pro wrestling documentary, I'm sort of the opinion that if the content is appropriate, I would much rather have a documentary in wrestling be too long than too short.
Right. No. For anyone that doesn't know, I was referencing, I guess he was on the show with Brian Alvarez, and I guess Vinny, during the review, mentioned that he thought that 2 hours was too long. I thought it was actually pretty good for length. And I will admit, I'm a person that when I go see a movie or I watch a documentary, I do want a lot of meat. I don't know why. I think between an hour and 30, an hour and 45 minutes to 2 hours, that's worth my money and time. I mean, if you show me a movie that's like an hour and 15 minutes, I'm like, why don't you just put that on TV and give it to me for free? So, you know, I do think there are parts of this that maybe could have been shown, but at the same time, I can't really think of any off the top of my head because it all seemed very relevant, even the way he integrated the promos from their matches, which, oddly enough, he was able to use as metaphors for the real-life situation going on in the NWA. So, you know, I thought it was a good length. So, yeah, anything else, Jerome?
I mean, Adam Pearce is a very good storyteller under the right circumstances. I think that's what comes across. If you're looking at this from a technical standpoint and you're sort of encompassing what he did as the subject of this documentary and as the director / editor, I think you should be able to walk away and say that Adam Pearce is very good at telling a story.
Yeah, I hope he gets another shot at maybe doing something similar for other wrestlers and other major feuds. And, you know, he's able to be the guy in the background helping them shape and inform. And hey, you know, who knows? Who knows what he'll do later on? You know, I think he spoke about it. Life outside of wrestling. That's what he kind of wants to focus on now. So, yeah, I thought
maybe
it was.
Ring of Honor again. Maybe he could try that. Am I right? Huh?
Maybe commentary? No.
I mean, he should be the commentator, but.
that's a totally different story for different.
That is a very different story.
All right. Well, if there's nothing else, Jerome, I think we can wrap this up.
For sure. We've gone about an hour, and an hour is always a great time for a podcast to end.
Yes, it is. So we're going to forego plugs, Jerome, unless there was really something special you wanted to let people know what was happening.
I mean, just continue to read my reviews at pwponderings.com. Follow me at twitter.com/JeromePWPEditor.
All right. Thank you, listeners. Really appreciate it. Spread the word. Tell your friends. Let them know about us. And, of course, if you are listening to us on Stitcher or iTunes, leave a 4- or 5-star review. Really appreciate it, folks. For Jerome Cusan, I'm Chris GST.
Do you understand what that means?
In front of God and country and the people of New England Championship Wrestling, I shed blood again in your name and at your hand. Now I need to ask myself, am I stupid? Because I keep coming back for more. Do I sound deranged? Do I sound like a lunatic? Do I sound like somebody who's...